Hello, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio, where our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guest may not represent those of the host or the station. Folks, I have a special guest for you today. If you like country music, if you want to know about the history of country, if you want to know about contra dancing, which I never heard of, contraband dancing, more history about New England, you need to listen to my guest today. I have with me today Thomas S. Curran, who is a writer, a farmer, conservationist, and historian. He wrote the book, All Join Hands, Dudley Loffman and the New England Country Dance Tradition. I want to welcome you, Tom, to Chatting with Betsy.
Well, thank you, Betsy. It's great to be with you.
Oh, you are welcome. It is my pleasure. I have to ask you, I ask all the authors that come on, is what inspired you to write such a wonderful book?
Oh, well, thank you. I do some volunteering for a folk music archive, and I happened to find a 1972 reel-to-reel tape of a folk festival in southwestern New Hampshire. And one of the performers on it was Dudley Loffman. And I knew he was still living, but I hadn't seen him in a long time. But I thought, you know, I'm going to get this digitized and bring him a CD. I bet he'll get a kick out of it. So I went over. He lives near Shaker Village in Canterbury. And he was there, and he was glad to make me a cup of coffee. And I said, Dudley, here's something from the Fitzwilliam Folk Festival, and he remembered it, and he was grateful. He was actually kind of down because with COVID, he hadn't been able to do a whole lot of dance calling, and the dances have kind of dried up. And he said, well, I've been actually, you know, kind of down in the dumps lately because we're not doing any dancing. And he said, you know, I'm 91 years old, and I feel like, you know, nobody's ever told my story. And so, you know, I had written an earlier book about the history of the Boston-Cambridge folk revival. And I was driving home that day, and I thought, I wonder if I should take this on. And so I went back about a week later, and I said, Dudley, you know, if we could do this once a week and talk for a couple of hours, for I've got 3 or 4 months I could devote, you know, a day a week to this, and I'll be happy to draft a biography. So we got involved in it, and we both really got to the point where we were looking forward to those days and enjoying it. And then
I bet it was very interesting. I bet it was very interesting, you know, to hear Dudley talk.
It's funny the way it happened. And then, of course, that's, you know, the moment of truth was when I delivered him the manuscript, and I said, here's a red pen, I'm going to go away for 2 weeks, and you carved this up. And I came back and said, well, what did you want to change? And he just said, leave it the way it is. And then I said, well, how do you feel about it? And he said, I cried all the way through it. And that made me think.
Oh, that must have made you verklempt.
Right? I know. Well, it choked me up. And then I thought, okay, well, let's run with it. Let's do it. So that's what. And it's taken along kind of a life of its own. So I'm glad it found its way into your reading room.
Definitely wanted this book. I have to tell the audience, sometimes I don't get a chance to read a book. I wanted to read this book. I asked Lisa Warren, who is the publicist for Thomas Curran of Lisa Warren Publicity, Public Relations, and I said, Lisa, I have to have this book. I want to read it. I love country, anything that has to do with country music. And folks, I'll tell you, reading this book brought memories of my own, you know, to life, but I learned a lot a lot of history that I did not know about. I mean, first of all, I didn't even know about Dudley Laufman. I never heard of him until your book, Thomas. And it must have been so heart-touching for you to hear that from Dudley, that he loved what you did with his autobiography. I mean, I think it's probably hard. I'm not a writer, to write a biography to begin with, but to do it on someone who's still alive and can read it, that must be very, it must have been challenging, but rewarding, well, very rewarding.
It was risky. I mean, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. At the same time, you want to tell the truth. And you never know how, you know, people will view things. And, you know, in this instance, you know, I think I listened carefully. I really listened carefully to him. And it came out well. I was proud of it. And I'm glad that he has enjoyed it as much as he has. First thing he wanted to do, he said, I need copies to give to my daughters. And I thought, well, that passes the test right there.
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm so glad you wrote this book. And thank you for writing this book. And tell Dudley that Betsy from New Jersey said, thank you for telling his story, because, you know, we learn from people's stories, don't we? And I learned a lot. And I just want to tell the audience, I personally went on YouTube and I looked up Dudley Laufman. And I suggest to the audience, go on YouTube and look up Dudley Laufman and hear the music. I was just, I just loved it. And I said, oh, I got to listen to this guy and watch him perform in the dancing. Tom, we think, I'm in New Jersey, and I always liked country music, right? And probably one of the rare people who did. As the song goes, I was country when country wasn't cool. But no one would think, you know, like, who would think of New England, I didn't, as having a rich history of country music. Can you tell the audience what, if I'm saying it right, what the country band dancing is compared to like square dancing?
Sure. Well, it's those of us who are from a European background. This is something our ancestors did for years and thousands of years. And in a lot of cultures across, Indo-Europe, I mean, right into Asia, that dancing was a whole lot more important. It was as important to the whole society as it maybe was to us only when we were in junior high school. Because it was the way in which people related to each other. It was a gathering that would happen. I mean, it's really hard to picture life without television, radio, movies, the internet. But without those things and without automobiles, dances were one of the few ways in which people actually gathered together as a community. And so they developed these, and they also, the music was relatively simple and usually done with traditional instruments, depending on which culture you were in, flutes or fiddles, bagpipes sometimes. And, you know, these were dances that developed over thousands of years. And for those of us whose ancestors were not scholars or lawyers or clergy, most of our ancestors they weren't literate. And so as things of memory were done through stories and through songs and music. And that's why all of this was handed down for hundreds and even thousands of years.
Yes, I know with the Appalachian music, they have a lot of the Scottish, Irish influence in their music. And, you know, it was really storytelling. And it's interesting, you say about, dancing, during World War II, there was a lot of the dances, and even post-World War II, people went to dances. My mom and my dad met at a dance.
Well, I was just going
to... Ireland.
For hundreds of years, you probably met your spouse at a dance. I mean, that was where you met members of the opposite sex, and that's where you... You try out a spin around the dance floor with somebody, and if it doesn't ring any bells, you just don't accept the next dance from the person. But if it does, well, then you go around the floor again, and then you might stop and would you like to share a plate of food with me? And you kind of get to know each other under those circumstances. And that's great that your parents met at a dance.
Yeah, in Harlem, my dad liked the big bands, the swing era, and so he said he saw my mother cross the room and knew she was the one for him.
Good for him.
I think
they wrote some songs about that, Some Enchanted Evening. Which is a wonderful way to fall in love.
Yes, I wish they had that now, Tom. I really do. I think it would be great if communities had these type of dances. Still, I know, way back when, when Urban Cowboy came out and that kind of music and the dancing became popular, they did have some country music dancing in New Jersey, but it was far, and it was my husband was into dancing, so we didn't go. But not a bar situation, but just like a town hall or YMCA or something like that, a community center, they would have this type of activity. I think that'd be wonderful.
Well, I think it's coming back, and one of the real problems, COVID really was you're pretty close to other people at a dance, and a lot of them in indoors, so they stopped the concert dances here in New England for the 2 years of COVID, but it's starting to come back now, and, there are concert dance societies that will help you set them up, and, if you want to share your email address, I can get you some of that information. It's a wonderful tradition. It's a lot of fun.
Yes, it looks like a lot of fun. Now, what's the difference between the contraband dancing and, say, square dancing? I'm more familiar with square dancing.
Well, it's interesting. The difference is basically in French. The English would line in a straight line, and people would face each other, sort of opposite each other, and that's where the contra comes in. The women on one side and the men on another, and that was how the dances started, and you'd couple up across. But there was no real limit to the number of people, and sometimes a set could be 12, 14, 16 couples. The French were different. And it wasn't in a line, and it was only eight people, four couples, in a square. And they called that in French a quadrille, and that because of the four couples. And that became the square dance. And the other thing, so we had the line dance tradition, the contra tradition, came over with the Irish and the Scots and the English. But one of the things I think we don't remember is how many French soldiers and sailors came over here to help us fight the revolution in the latter part of the 1700s. And they brought that square with them. And that, unlike anything else, something like that got very fashionable. So that's where square dancing came into being. And the other thing that happened is that dancing became so popular that a lot of those French soldiers and sailors well, not only was dance popular, but the land was so beautiful over here that some of them just decided to stay here, become Americans, and go to work as dancing instructors. So that's where square dancing got so popular and then spread across the country.
That's very interesting. I just want to tell the audience, in gym, when I was in grammar school, we did have square dancing as part of our exercise with gym class. So I really enjoyed that because it didn't have to be real coordinated like the other things that we used to do that I was never picked for. But with square dancing, you know, it was just a lot more fun to me than the typical gym class. How did Dudley Loffman get interested in doing what he did for so many years? I'd like the audience to know that, how he got into, you know, being a caller and musician.
Well, it's sort of, he was a suburban kid, like, you know, I was, and maybe you were too, but he was a bit of a misfit. He wasn't a really good student. He was a good athlete, the hockey player, in junior high and high school, but he wasn't that great at academics. And his mother decided that what he ought to do is learn a trade. And she had friends who had a dairy farm in New Hampshire. So she arranged to have him go get a summer job at this dairy farm. This would have been during World War II. They were an old-time family, and they had these contra dances. And it was that magic time of adolescence where he was discovering, you know, a new way of life in the country. He was discovering that he loved the animals, that he loved the country life. And he was also, you know, going into puberty. So he was taking an interest in the opposite sex. And, you know, the dance just became a magic place for him. And also something, as it turned out, that he took to. He learned to play the accordion. He learned to play the fiddle. And he got a lot of attention for it. And, you know, so he did more of it. And then I think the other piece to this is that it was a dying art form. It was something that was sort of at that point dying out. And he ended up spending a lot of time with the old men and the old women who could teach him this stuff. So he soaked up an awful lot of tradition that otherwise would have disappeared. So that's sort of basically it, a kind of a combination of the fact that it helped to be popular with girls, and it also was something that he could learn from the old timers. And as he said to me, he said, it changed my life. That's all I wanted to do, was called dances. So that's what he did.
You know, we always find our niche, right, in life.
Right.
And some people aren't, you know, great at academics, but they can do other things. I was just so thrilled in reading this book that I felt like I was there. You made it, you wrote it, Tom, where I felt that I was there in Dudley's life. Made it, you know, so real. You talked about, so you got to get this book. Talking about, I think, 1964 Folk Festival with Joan Baez and Bob Dylan.
Yep.
And Bill Monroe. And it's like, oh, I remember, you know, watching that on YouTube. Really, you know, just bringing back history. And it's so important for us to know people like Dudley Loffman, who made such a huge contribution to society and to music. And in 2009, he received a major recognition for his work, the NEA's National Heritage Fellowship Award the nation's highest honor in the folk and traditional arts. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's interesting that it's interesting you touched upon that because that meant a lot to him. If you look at the people, if you look up that Cultural Heritage Award, there are a lot of people that you won't recognize. It might be a craftsperson from Kentucky. It might be a Native American bead worker from New Mexico or Arizona. But sprinkled in there, Betsy, are names that you would recognize, like Bill Monroe, like Mavis Staples, who were designated as national treasures. And Dudley got that designation in 2009 and went to Washington and received that award. And he's very proud of it, and he should be, because that if you read those people, you really do get a great cross-section of all kinds of the cultures that go into, you know, making up who we are. Klezmer musicians and blues musicians and bluegrass musicians and ballads people, and then dancers and you know, I told him, I said, you know, you're so much like Bill Monroe. You've taught so many musicians. You've written your own material. And you've been everywhere. I mean, he has played at, you know, every church and grange and synagogue in New England. And you can't mention a town. I mean, you just, you know, you name a town in rural Vermont and he'll go, oh, yeah, I can, and he'll know three or four people there because he's been doing it for so long. So that was a real honor, and I really give those folks, the folklorists who pick those people, a lot of credit, because they're all the real thing.
Yes. Bill Monroe was awesome. I wish I had the opportunity to see him in person, but I didn't. And I know who Mavis Staples is. She sang with Marty Stewart. The Staple Singers, and you think of Marty Stewart was 13, 14 playing with Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. I mean, the talent, you know, some people just had that natural talent, but I'm so glad that Dudley Loffman was recognized in 2009 when, you know, so many times people get awards rewarded when they can't enjoy it. And I'm glad that he was able to enjoy and reap, you know, what he sowed. He did a lot of good things in bringing the country, his area, and other areas together with music. Music is so important in our lives. It really is. And the power of music is so amazing. I'll give an example. My husband had Alzheimer's, but he loved Johnny Cash, and he liked Bill Monroe and, you know, Ralph Stanley, and I would play the music for him to calm him down so I could get him to do things. And it worked. And music is really very powerful. I know that Willie Nelson, the Outlaw, and the Waylon Jennings, they would be, you know, like music, and then the hippies, you know, would join together. And I know you saw that up in New England, the country dancing getting mixed in with, you know, all kinds of people, hippies, the yuppies.
People would come together.
Yes. And I
remember when I was first came to New Hampshire from Boston, I would, you know, I'd go into a bar and I would play, you know, some Bob Dylan songs or some Phil Oakes songs, or, and people would listen politely, the country people, and then some fellow would come up and give me a beer and say, "Hey, you know any Johnny Cash?" and I would I would say, well, you know, I do know I walked the line, and then I would realize, you know, my job is to learn this stuff, and if that's what the audience wants to hear, I should find, you know, how much of it does resonate in me. And just, I think, as you say, I fell in love with country music. It's very expressive, and it's the way in which I think, to some degree, culturally, particularly for men, you tend to, in our culture, you tend to hide your feelings, that you don't express your emotions.
Right.
But it comes out, you know, and it comes out in country music. When you hear Hank's voice or Johnny Cash's voice, they really are, or for that matter, you know, Waylon Jennings or anybody, they really are, they're showing their emotions, and that is so important, and it's so comforting for people to hear. I can tell you this, what's the song, is it all, I Fall to Pieces? There's a Patsy Cline song.
Yes, I Fall to Pieces, yeah.
But when you, I've known this from singing it, when you start singing that song, and Patsy Cline's a perfect example of this, the room just goes silent until you hit the second or third note, and then there's a great outpouring of breath. People saying, oh, and I've had that happen over and over again with that song, because it puts you in touch with either the wonder or the pain of being in love. And nobody did that like Patsy Cline. But but I think that's one of the things that we learn to do is through music, is to share our emotions, let our guard down, and, you know, tell the truth about how we feel.
Yes, yes. And the folk music, which was probably, what was it, late 50s, in the 60s, early 60s, was started off in these little coffee houses, all here anyway in my area, in the Village. And,
yeah.
You know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Joni Mitchell, the Kingston Trio. They had a lot of good songs. Some of them were political and made you more aware of things going on in the country. And how is, in your opinion, what's the connection between country dance and the folk revival of the 60s and 70s?
I think for those, the people, just what you described, and out of those, were all great artists and great singers. I think the ones I look back on with the most amazement are Peter, Paul, and Mary. I mean, they were like the Beatles. Everything they threw at you, you know, was a hit. And I think that kind of spirit was what we, you know, when we came up from the city, we wanted to find a way to connect with people in the country. But culturally, well, you mentioned politics, and a lot of it was politics. A lot of the people in the cities had one belief system politically, or tended to have things that they thought were important. And the people in the country were maybe different, and had the opposite viewpoint. A dance was a place where people could come together. And you know, you would have, and I was, it was really fun playing with, for me, and at that time I had, you know, my hair looked like I'd stuck my finger in an electric socket, but I would end up playing with guys with buzz cuts, you know, crew cuts, and I would, you know, my first impulse might have been to say, I can't play with these guys, they're rednecks. And I would go, no, they're human beings. If they want to play with me, I ought to just figure out who they are and treat them like people. And that was a huge lesson for me. It helped break some walls down. So I think that's where the dance, really did bring people together in a physical way, actually, because when you're at a dance, a contra dance, you end up at one time or another in the evening holding hands with everybody. And maybe just for a couple seconds twirling around, but still it's contact, it's human contact, and it's a pretty wonderful thing.
It is. Music transcends, I think, across gender, politics, whatever your beliefs are. I think music connects us. I was really surprised when I worked at a preschool and one of the young girls working in the summer, she loved folk music. I said, Heather, you're an old soul. She liked the Kingston Trio. I mean, I was shocked that this young girl liked this music so much, and she just had a baby and she named her son Dylan after Bob Dylan.
That's great.
So you just don't know. I was so surprised. I always liked the Peter Paul and Mary singing Living on a Jet Plane. I didn't know till many years later that John Denver wrote that.
Yeah, that was a John Denver tune. They were great. I had the pleasure to meet Paul Stuckey, and he had a recording studio up in Maine, and I cut a record there years ago, and he's just the kindest man. I can tell you the story. It was on a beach, and I took a break. I was working with his engineer. He wasn't there. But when I was having lunch on the beach, I looked down the beach and I saw this tall guy walking my way, and I realized, oh my God, that's Paul Stuckey. And I saw that he was walking towards me, and I thought, oh, I don't want to say anything stupid, act like a dumb fan. So I was trying to think of what I would say to him, and he got about 15 feet away from me, and he pointed at me and he said, "You're Tom Curran, aren't you?" And he had just seen my name on the board of the studio as who was there that day. But it was so great because he completely disarmed me. He took the initiative instead of, "Oh my God, I love your records," and me acting like a dope. He broke the ice. Oh, which was great.
Reading your book, I had to go listen to Peter, Paul, and Mary.
I had to go
on YouTube and listen to them again. I remember, I'm 65, and I remember singing If I Had a Hammer in day camp, going way back, folks, and Blowing in the Wind was very big during the Vietnam War. Huge song. During that time, and it's just, they don't make music. The music of today isn't like it was back then, and people might get mad at me for saying that, but that's my opinion. And you're a conservationist, so do you, this might sound like a silly question, do you have a farm, and how does that connect the conservationist with the country dancing?
Well, that's a interesting question. Yes, part of what I wanted to do when I came up from the city was learn about growing food and taking care of animals, and that's all trial and error. But I did learn those skills mostly from old timers. And I actually ran a dairy farm for a while. I learned of all the different animals that you can have. I felt like I had a talent for working with cows. I felt like I understood cows, and they understood me. And the product we put out was a good product. We had good milk, good healthy milk, and I always sold everything I could produce. And then, you know, that was all part of, you know, the, again, in those communities, I get to know the people, and the social life was very much around dances in the Granges. And that's, you know, basically how I contacted with local people. You know, there was a situation where they were going to sell a farm and develop it into houses. And I thought that that would be, you know, a tragedy. So I helped volunteer to save the farm, to find the money to save the farm, which we did. And then one thing led to another. And eventually I became a professional conservationist, and I went to work for the Pew Charitable Trust in Philadelphia. So that's why I was driving through Jersey on my way from New Hampshire to Philly. And Pew would actually give me funds to go out in the countryside and find good conservation projects. And that was, you know, in the process, I would get to meet a lot of rural people and get to know a lot of the communities. So it was really a gift.
That's amazing. I have to ask you this because you're up in New Hampshire. Do you produce maple syrup?
Yep, I've done that. Betsy, that's such an exhilarating, for up here anyway, because it gets so cold and the days are so short, that when it breaks in February and the sun comes out and you can tap the trees, it's so liberating, you know, to go out. It's hard work.
Yeah, I bet, but it's so good.
It's so much fun to go out. And then when you start the fires and start boiling the sap at night, all the old timers come by and they want to come in and tell stories. And it is very much like, you know, the quickening of the year. The life is coming back into the hills, and, you know, the snow starts to melt, and you really feel like it won't be long before you can get the gardens in. So it's a magic time.
It must be. It must be so, you know, beautiful. I've heard that it's so beautiful up there with the foliage during the autumn time. Never made it up to New Hampshire. Been to Connecticut, Massachusetts, but not New Hampshire.
And I would urge you to come up in the spring or the fall, but those are good times. You know, there's all kinds of things to do. You know, there are places you can shop for antiques, or you can look at crafts. You can go to contra dances, and also, you know, going to the sugar houses is just, it's a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I went years ago to the Amish country, and, that was really nice there. I have to thank you, Thomas S. Curran, for coming on, chatting with Betsy today. I could talk to you forever. Book.
Fun.
You're welcome. Folks, all join hands. Dudley Laufman and the New England Country Dance Tradition. This is a must buy. This is a must read. We have to keep these traditions going. We have to learn about history, right, and cultural and music. And this book was very heart-touching to me. And please hug Dudley for me if you see him. And tell him I said thank you for all that he's done. And where can people buy the book, Thomas?
Well, probably for the larger audience, the easiest thing is just go to Amazon. And you can pick it up from them. It's in local bookstores in New Hampshire and Maine. But for your listenership, the best thing is just go to Amazon and get it from them.
And where can people connect with you? Do you have a website?
Well, I'm working on one. I'll give you my email address, and I'm happy to answer emails. And I'll say it first. It's tomcurran47@gmail.com. That's from the old Club 47, which is a great coffee house. So it's tomcurran47@gmail.com.
Great. And I want to encourage the audience. I like to really encourage the audience. You know what? Google Thomas F. Curran. Google Dudley Laufman. Google the New England country dance tradition. And just, there's, I saw the dances and the entertainment. I think I went on a website that was listed in your book, and of course now I can't find it. And it was just really entertaining, and I really enjoyed it. It was some clips of the with the Dudley Laufman's that group, the singers. It was like little clips of the entertainment. That was really cool to watch. And I love the cover of your book, Thomas. I want to say that to the audience. I know on audio, but there's a picture of Dudley on the top, and on the bottom, to me, it is people that are dancing in colonial times. And I think that's a really cool book cover. So I really like that. Go ahead.
Suddenly occurred to me that was the cover. And so I went right down to the computer and sort of put those two things together. If people want to email me, I could sign a book directly to them. If they like that, they can go to get it from Amazon, or if they want to send me an email, I can give them the directions as to how to get it, and they can tell me how they like it inscribed.
Oh, okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Thomas S. Curran.
Thank
I want to spell your last name, my Jersey accent. Sometimes people can't understand me. It's C-U-R-R-E-N, folks. You're welcome. Get the book. If you know anyone who loves music, especially the folk music and the old-time country dancing and that music, getting this book is a gift. Hey, Christmas is around the corner, right? This is almost the middle of August. So if you're starting to think of Christmas gifts, this is a great one.
Oh,
so I want to thank you.
All right.
Oh, you are welcome. You're welcome, Thomas. It was so nice talking to you on my show. And best of luck on all your endeavors. And if you ever write another book, come on my show. I'd be more than happy to have you.
I will.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Folks, I want to thank you for listening today. You heard Thomas S. Curran, author and writer of All Join Hands, Dudley Laufman, and the New England Country Dance Tradition. There will be information about Thomas in the blog. Please read the blog that Jeannie White, her station manager, writes. And Jeannie also produces the show, and I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who's CEO of Pastor World Talk Radio, that makes this all possible. And I want to thank you for listening. Please share this show. Please tell your friends about it. I also want to help as many people as possible, and I have all different kinds of guests on here that are wonderful resources. And I just want to thank you all for listening and subscribing. And if you don't already subscribe, it is for free. Chatting with Betsy is for free on Spotify, Spreaker, iHeart, YouTube, just to name a few. And as I always say at the end of my show, folks, in a world where you could be anything, please be kind and shine your light bright. Because if we all did that, it would be a much kinder and brighter world. And that's what I believe. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio. Till we chat again, be safe. Bye-bye now.